Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening. The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Celestion Speakers. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, welcome, Scott.
So I just want to let everyone know that's listening. I want to hand out the phone number again. It's going to be 323-203-0815. Now, we'll take callers about midway through the show, so you don't have to hurt your fingers dialing away. So 323-203-0815. You can also join us on our live chat room, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, and we'll take questions from there, too. Before we get started, I just want to tell you seven things you may not know about Celestion. The company started in 1924 as an electrical manufacturing and plating company. The first product was a loudspeaker for a radiogram. It had a bamboo-reinforced paper cone named by company founders Cyril and Ray French as the Celestion.
And the original G12 was also a radio speaker and was first produced in 1936. When Vox came calling in the mid-50s, it was reinforced to make it strong enough to use in their AC-15 amp. In 1960, it got a coat of blue paint and became the Alnico Blue that we know and love.
Celestion's longest-serving employee began work in 1974 working on the Greenback assembly line. Nowadays, she oversees the UK factory production.
I didn't know this one. The G in G12 was originally used to mean general purpose. These days, it's used to signify guitar speakers.
Talking about letters and abbreviations, the M in G12M refers to the size of the magnet assembly, both in terms of weight and dimensions, which is medium. H is G12H is for heavy. These days, there are many different letters denoting the many different size variations. Why so many? Because the magnet size is one of the most important factors in determining a speaker's tone.
Celestion introduced the first ever dedicated guitar speaker to use a neodymium magnet, or neomag, the G12 Century, which was launched in 2001. A more popular Century Vintage followed a couple of years later, and it is still part of Celestion's standard range. Grammy Award-winning Alvin Youngbloodheart is a big fan. Neodymium magnets are very powerful, so only small amounts of material are required to generate the motor strength needed to move the speaker cone. This can reduce the weight of the loudspeaker by more than half.
And lastly, the Vintage 30 is officially Celestion's most popular guitar speaker. Since its launch back in 1986, it is estimated that more than 1 million of them have been built.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce a member starting out as Talis, and then in the DLR band and the supergroup with Steve Vai and Greg Bissonette, Mr. Big with Paul Gilbert, Steve Vai Band, and now the Winery Dogs, another absolute supergroup, and has another CD coming out in 1 week with Billy Sheehan, obviously, Mike Portnoy, Tony McPalpain, and Derek Sherinian. That will be out next Tuesday. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Billy Sheehan.
Howdy.
Welcome to the show.
That's Tony McAlpine.
I know. I totally butcher names.
That's all right.
There's a guy from Taylor that we've had on, and I still got to ask him if I totally put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. Anyways.
No problem. Anyway. We're all friends here.
So I guess first let's get to back in the Talis days. That's probably where you started to develop your style of playing because it was a three-piece band. Can you talk about that and how that helped build
your
style?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm playing in a three-piece band. We, you know, the economics of the situation back then, we were all, you know, poor and trying to save every penny we could. So three guys in a band was the ideal amount because $100, you make $33 each. You add a fourth guy, you're only making $25 each a night. So that was a big factor back then. $7 or $8 made a big difference. So we, for the lack of instrumentation, we didn't have keyboards or second guitar. I had to do a lot of things on my bass to make up for the lack of personnel. So, for example, we would play, you know, like Carry On Wayward Son by Kansas, and there was a... I'd have to do the keyboard.
Nice.
I'd have to do the little extra stabs and things, little horn parts, and sometimes do the harmony guitar line if the copy song we were doing required it. So, all doing that for so many years... with two tremendous players, too, dear friends of mine back in Buffalo that's still back there, Paul Varga and Dave Constantino, drums and guitar, respectively. We just came up with a lot of ways for three guys to make a lot of sound and still split that $100 in three ways. So it sure made a big difference. So that was really had a lot to do with the tonality I went for because I needed to cover a lot. And then when the guitar player was start to solo and I'm just playing a single note, it's got to have a lot to it. So I did the double pickup, the dual amps, and one amp is doing one thing, another amp is doing a low end. So all those things within Talis, a lot of those things were developed out of necessity, which later became useful in many other situations.
Very cool. Now, you're currently, the current band that you're out with is the Winery Dogs.
Yes.
Fantastic group. Now, there's a song on there that I want to talk about right off the bat. It's called You Saved Me. Jeff, would you play the clip? It's number
two.
Here
we go.
So now this song, Mike Portnoy wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
So with this group, how did, you know, in specific, like let's start with this song. How did you guys write these songs? Like he comes in with lyrics. This song clearly is led by you, the tapping on the bass.
Well, all the songs came together mostly from jams in a little room, little amps, mm-hmm. and just sitting around in a hot, sweaty little room with a tiny little drum kit, which is great for Mike because he uses the monster colossal kit. So it kind of concentrated the Portnoy into a super powerful cube
right.
of percussive madness. And so it was really kind of cool. And Richie played through a little guitar amp, and I don't even know what amp. I was using some little thing there that Richie had in the studio. And I had that as a little bit... It's just all done on the left hand just by pressing down the notes. And it's only on the D and G strings, so the E and the A are free. So I started to do a little... I just came up with this... sitting around in my house. And it was just kind of a little thing that I had. So I started fooling around with it, just as kind of a warm-up as we're sitting around waiting for things to get plugged in and all. And Mike started playing a beat to it. And then Richie go, what key is it? And I go, I'll try like an E minor or something or other. And he started doing things along with it. So we came up with... a couple of changes, chorus section, bridge section, a solo section, put them all together. And then Mike on his own, he took it home and he was excited about it and came up with some lyrics. Hey, you guys, I got some words for this. And Richie sang them and it was as simple as that. But it came from, I did a lot of little thingies where I'm like I said earlier, mm-hmm. back in the Talis days, I always had to do a little things with my, by hammering a little, mm-hmm. actually it came from, originally I was doing a...
Nice.
you know, just by, you know, just kind of a fun thing, but, you know, just fooling around. And that later turned into a whole bunch of other things, and one of them eventually evolved to the little riff that You Saved Me was based upon.
Yeah, when I first was listening to the CD, I heard that tapping. I'm like, oh, it's Billy doing his tapping. And then I hear the root note being played.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy crap, I know he's doing this crosshand thing. So luckily, guys, I'm videoing it, so I got to. Yeah. We'll be able to show you what he's doing. It's pretty cool.
It's precarious live, because if I mess up at all, I'm doomed, because there's no and it's such an upfront part that it's got to be done right. So so my hand is crossing on. So I was going to try a couple times to go. Do that, change it to that. Way too, that doesn't work. So I stay out of that one. So, but it's precarious live, because I always feel, the weight of the world on my shoulders. Because if I blow that part, the whole song falls apart. So I gotta make sure. I haven't blown it yet, but the night is young.
Well, you know, it's early, you know, hey. And late for the East Coast, but hey. So on that song, what amp did you use in the recording?
I used my standard live setup, which was a Pierce preamp with some Ashley compression, Ashley Audio, a little mini crossover to trim low end off my distortion and high end, and a Hartke HA1000.
LH1000,
sorry, for the low end, which is just 1,000 watts of pure muscle. There's barely even any controls on it. It's volume, bass, middle, treble, good night, and that's it, and on-off, basically, and a balance control, which doesn't really, just if you're using different cabinets. So it's just a real basic, solid, beautiful piece of amplifier. It amplifies, and boy, does it ever. And I use the AK series cabinets, which are paper cones by Hartke. And I've opened up the cabinets, actually, to look inside it, because from back in the days when I was a kid, and every time you bought a new piece of gear, you had to unscrew it and open it up and look inside and see what made it work. And I actually went inside the Hartke cabinets out of curiosity, and they're put together just rock solid, so really pleased about that. But on the high end, I use the HA3500.
Yes, sir.
Which is a less powerful amp with a lot more controls on it. I use that for the high frequencies, so... with a two amp, the dual output, the high frequencies, you're going to want more tonal variation. So I use that for that. You don't need as much pure raw wattage, so that works out well.
Well, speaking of Hartke amps, definitely want to thank Mr. Andy Winston here from Samson Technologies.
He's here.
Hartke.
Andy is here.
He brought Billy here for us today.
And I'll take him back home when we're done.
That's right.
But I'll leave him at home. I'm not doing anything. I'll just take him, just drop him off.
So the one thing it's definitely worth talking about now. I should mention that, you know, we'll go into the amps, but if you guys really want to go into Billy's sound and his amps, is it like a 7-part video series on YouTube? It's I watched the whole thing, but anyways.
Oh, from Hartke.
Yeah, from Hartke.
Yeah, it was I went to Hartke out in Long Island, right. The actual headquarters, and I sat down on the videotape and I went through the amp top to bottom. And a lot of times when people do that, they do they consider that experts are watching them, but I described it in a way that if you don't know much about an amp at all and you're interested in finding out more about them, I try to describe it in a way that would really make it understandable at any level.
Right.
And I believe that the series you're speaking of on YouTube successfully did that.
Yeah, it's a great series. I mean, it's, if you really want to dive deep into it, check it out. It's on Hartke's YouTube channel. But the one thing I wanted to mention and point out that might go against conventional wisdom is that you use the 15-inch speakers as your highs,
yeah,
and 10 inches as your lows.
Yeah,
so can you talk about why you do that?
they always set them up backwards when I show up to a gig. No, the 15 goes on top. The 15 alone has a larger surface area, and so you tend to get a sweeter sound and less directional sound than a smaller speaker. The larger speakers disperse wider. So I've always used 15s for high frequencies, other than when I use only 810 cabinets. But even when I use 810 cabinets for highs, they seem piercing and a little bit shrill to me and a little directional. So, but for low end, the 410s, coupled together, there's some interesting phasing going on between the different speakers, and small speakers in clusters, the Bose speakers that came out in the 70s, I believe. They had a little tiny, like 4 or 5 inch drivers, but they had a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. Same with the original 810 cabinets. There were 8 10-inch speakers, and small speakers and clusters sound great for low end. Plus, because they're a small speaker, they're fast and sharp, and they're not, they don't have the lag time that a 15 would have trying to push that much air for a low end. So it seems backwards, but now there's a Facebook page for the Attitude Bass. I play the Yamaha Attitude Bass, and a lot of guys are on there. We talk about everything surrounding not only the bass, but the amps and the Harkey stuff I use. And a lot of people have followed my path on this, and they concur with me that the 15 is sweet sounding for high end, and the 410s for low. I've got an incredible punch. So it does. It seems to be nonsense initially, or backwards initially, but in fact there is some logic to it.
Well, so I want to mention that before the show we actually shot a video with Billy talking about his signature bass,
yeah,
and going through all the different features. So that will be posted up on YouTube. You can find that by either searching my name, Scott Sill, or at Selenium. That'll be up in the next couple of days. So since we're talking about the bass, can you just talk about one of the things that's really unique and just striking is that you have two outputs.
Yeah.
So how did that come about, and what do you use them for?
Originally, I love the tone of the old Gibson basses. They had this big, giant, fat, silver, chrome pickup on the neck position, and you're very, very iconic visually. And that's a super deep low end. And I love that sound. But the first bass I got was the P bass, because the P bass is the iconic bass of all time, really.
Right.
Probably on the percentage of the amount of records that the P bass is on, as opposed to any other instrument, is there. The P bass dwarfs them all, of course. There are a lot of great basses, of course, but the P bass is the icon. So, but the tone of that bass, which I loved, and is the ultimate bass tone, but it didn't have that super deep low end you can get off the Gibson bass. So I sent away to Gibson, got the pickup, chiseled a hole in my P bass, the neck position, didn't measure, I didn't know what I was doing, you know, I was just a kid. I cut a hole in the pick guard, and my mom had to sweep up and vacuum up the wood chips off the living room, literally, no joke. And underneath on the pick guard now, of my original P bass, if you take the pick guard off, there's still the, I used the blue magic marker to mark out where I was going to cut.
Nice.
And you can still see the blue magic marker mount on that. And I didn't know how to wire both pickups to one output. So the pickup came kind of pre-wired, so I just strung the wire in there, dug a new channel in the wood underneath the pickguard to get the wire over there, and then just drilled another hole in the P bass pickguard by the original output, put a second output there, and I was done. Now, because I didn't know how to wire a switch, I'm glad, because it required me to plug it into two inputs,
mm-hmm,
which is kind of cool. And having two cords off the bass, it was funny because people are very visual. Back in the old days, they see my bass, wow, it's two cords, it must be twice as powerful, you know. It's nothing to do with it, but people are visual sometimes. That's how that works. So and then eventually it did help out in that there was this low frequency going on all the time. And when I had to do something fancy schmancy, which would generally be favor the P bass pickup, I never lost the low end, because when you tend to do through one amp, high frequencies coming out usually masks the lows. That's just the nature of the beast. Where if a separate amp is doing them, that's why in your speaker, for your stereo, there's a tweeter and a woofer. They're assigned different jobs. And if it was all coming out of one speaker, you get a little less efficiency. So it's not to get too technical about it, but the dual output really made a big difference. And I found out later I wasn't alone. A Rickenbacker, Ricco Sound. It's a stereo plug, but it's still the same output, separate output for each pickup. All the original Lembeck basses had two outputs, one for each pickup. John Paul Jones, I read an article about him from Led Zeppelin, and he wired his jazz bass so that the two pickups would go to two different amps. So it's a solution that other people have come up with, so therefore verifies that I'm not completely out of my mind by doing it. So
yeah.
Others have done it too. So.
And so then you actually distort one of the channels, and then you have one clean.
Well, clean is always on, distortion is on or off. Like right now, I have a little pedal. So here's just, when I turn it on, the distortion's in there now, but the original clean doesn't go away. Clean is always... You never want to lose that, because then you're going to lose your bass, what you need to lock in with the drums. So you add the distortion in. Here, I'll turn it down. Ghost it in a little bit. Now you got the... But the clean is still in there, because without the clean, that's the problem with distorting a bass, you lose your low end. You lose that deep thing. And you got to have. Right now we're just plugged in. I'm just using one output from the bass. And that's why I'll illustrate that by moving it over. Am I doing the right thing here? Yeah. Plugging in just the low pickup. It's not much articulation. It's just a big, fat, single, solid note. Where the high pickup, you get all the... you don't get that out of the low pickup. So when I'm doing this nonsense, still there's a huge low pulse underneath it when I got the second amp plugged in. I don't happen to have it now, but try to make it easier to set up in the studio. So that's a little bit of how all this stuff somehow works.
So Jeff, speaking of the classic sound of Billy, I've got a clip here from Time Machine. So the one thing I want to point out here is this is just classic Billy just rocking, but it kicks into the chorus. And the other thing that Billy is known for is the harmonies that he sings. So number three.
Okay. Before we play that, I just posted a picture of the rig he's using on Facebook, on our Facebook page, so you can take a look at this little Harkey amp, which is a killer little amp, and his pedal setup. Okay? Here I go with the clip.
Love that song, guys. If you don't have the CD, you got to check it out. Time Machine. Well, I mean, they're all great songs, but for my own personal opinion, go to track 11 and start with that one because it's just killer. But anyways,
cool.
Time Machine. So when you're doing the harmonies, how did that come about? Who kind of arranges that?
You mean the vocal harmonies?
Vocal harmonies.
We just kind of, whatever the lead is, and Richie sings pretty high, so I can go over him with falsetto. Or underneath them with my natural voice, you know. So, and we just basically sing whatever the chord is and whatever the motion is that he's doing. And way back from the early days, my original band Talus in Buffalo, we were a harmony band. We did Three Dog Night, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Grand Funk Railroad, all heavy harmony singing all the time. And Mr. Big also heavy harmony band. We did a lot of singing to Mr. Big. So I always liked that. You know, as far as musicians, I always encourage players when I'm doing my clinics and seminars, whatever, sing, get it, sing too. You know, you'll at least save a hotel room from not having to hire a backup singer. that'll enhance your bottom line for sure. But I as a fan, you generally, when you're out at a club listening to music, you're not necessarily wiggling your fingers around. You might be air drumming. Maybe air guitaring and air bass, but you're definitely singing. You know, right. Singing is a thing. You know, and I've been lucky to play with some just great, great singers. The guys in Talus were awesome singers, a drummer and guitar player. David Lee Roth, I love his voice. I still do it to this day. Mr. Big Eric Martin, one of the best singers around. Richie Kotzen now with the Winery Dogs is blowing people's minds because he's got this Paul Rogers, Chris Cornell, Prince hybrid. That is just wonderful, and he just nails it live so well. It's great. So I'm lucky to play with great lead singers. So I do what I can, not only to harmonize to enhance the song as much, but also sometimes to jump in and give them a little break. They can pull back as they're singing a whole show. So it's a lot of work on a little tiny set of vocal cords. So we do our best.
Now, on that bass solo lick, would you mind kind of, over the next couple of minutes, kind of just break down a little bit of what you're doing there? And then and then after we'll do that, then we're going to take a short break, and then we'll announce the winner of the Hartke Bass Attack pedal. But let's talk about how what you're doing there.
So we did the little break. Something simple, because the drums are just riding. The next one. Then Mike went... He played a played along with his drum thing there. Then the next thing is kind of a wacky little thing that Richie and I did together. You can see it on the camera. Oh, sorry, I played it wrong. I played it wrong again. See, when you, whenever you record something, you forget what the heck you did.
Relearn your
and,
part.
I this in particular on the Winery Dogs record, when we recorded it, we just flew. We weren't thinking at all. You know, do a bass thing, okay, woo, okay, next song. And then we had to go back and learn this stuff. And Time Machine wasn't a bad one, but the lick and Not Hopeless, I spent days trying to figure out that. Days, and I already played it, but I just couldn't figure out what the heck my fingers were doing. So anyway, that one, go back to the original lick. That, that's it. So that's the second part. And then the next one is a little tricky. So, sorry. Just kind of a cascading, crazy pull-off thing. And it's got to go by quick, too. But I'm a firm believer that there's nothing I do that someone else can't do. And if you work at it hard enough, anything I do, you can do. You know, it just may take you a while. But, you know, it's just piece by piece. Because I learn really complicated stuff sometimes that's just overwhelming in the beginning. But you take it a little chunk at a time, piece at a time, piece, and you get... Forget. There it is. Finally got it. So.
Let me ask you, though, when you're because you're playing pretty fast, how do you get that articulation where it's so clear? I mean, I can really... Because you're using distortion,
thing.
Too, and, and it's I can hear every note.
Well, that's why even with the bass off, it's the notes are sounding loud on the bass. So I practice a lot with no amp at all.
Okay.
And I think it's an important thing because you're really... You're trying to get everything you can off those strings in the bass, minus any electronics or any help at all. Then when you plug in, that's just icing on the cake. But I really encourage players to not rely so much on electronics as your hands. Electronics are there to help you out later, and they're certainly we couldn't live without them. But if you're getting all the tones and all the notes you need to get off the bass, quiet and clean. I mean, in a quiet room, doing it cleanly. Then when you plug into an amp, you've got an amazing tonal spectrum to work
when
with.
Whether you're tapping or plucking on your right hand, when you hit the notes with your left hand on the fretboard, are you hammering on?
Sometimes.
So you're like attacking it?
Yeah, sometimes you have to. I got to hit that. It was pretty. And one thing you can see in the camera, I always... put my index finger underneath my middle finger, and the middle finger kind of pushes down, so it's this double, kind of a double whammy, so I can... Now, without an amp at all, it's still coming off the bass pretty loud.
Yeah, you're hearing every note.
Yeah.
But your left hand, you seem to attack it.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll hit it, I'll hit it really hard.
When I was in, years ago in school, that was one of the things to get, when you're playing fast, they had said, hammer, hit it. With your finger on the left hand while you're picking or whatever you're doing.
Yeah,
you seem to be doing that.
Yeah, a million variations. Sometimes it's practice. I'll just take my left hand and go.
He's doing that one hand. It's all left hand.
Just build up that strength and bounce and get it in time and get it note to note so the notes are even, mm-hmm. so that the little spaces between the notes are start to equal out. And as I do it right there, right now, it's a little sloppy, but I have to pound on it and pound on it and get it up to speed. But it's a great, I get real creative with my practicing. I do a lot of things to get my hands up to a level where they could do almost anything I can imagine, then forget about that completely and then do music.
Mm-hmm.
So leave the mechanics aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the articulation.
Well, let's take a break real quick, and when we come back, then we'll be taking callers, and we'll announce the winner of the Harkey Bass Attack pedal. You got the clip ready for...
Hey, everybody. It's Norm from Norm's Rare Guitars. Want to thank you all at Flow Guitar Enthusiasts for helping us promote our show. We're doing a show for the homeless, The Midnight Mission, January 11th at MIT. It's going to be featuring Joe Bonamassa, Robin Ford, Jimmy Vivino, Jimmy Earle, and Grant Geisman, and more. And there's going to be some other big names, so please stay in touch with us, and we'll be happy to let you know who else is going to be on the show.
To mention, too, check out Norm's Rare Guitars. He didn't mention on there, normsrareguitars.com, and go to his site, and there's more information on that benefit concert. Norm's a great guy. We've had him on the show, and he's just, it's a good cause.
So. Iconic store.
Yes.
we have the winner. He's actually from San Jose.
San Jose, Brothso, is that a B or a K?
That is a K, sorry.
Karanovic.
That is the winner of the Harkey Bass Attack.
All right, Brothso.
Congratulations.
I know him. He's great.
We like giving stuff away around here.
Right on.
Thank you very much again, Andy, for bringing that and so we can give
my
that away.
My pleasure, guys. My pleasure.
Cool. Do we have any callers right now?
Yes, we do. Let me
let's go ahead and take a caller.
Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have the name, your name and where you're calling from?
Jamie Bradley, Buffalo, New York.
Hey, do you have a question for Billy?
Jamie, what are you doing here? He's my
cousin.
Hey,
what's up, brother? How you doing?
Doing great, man.
Hey, the new Yamaha that you got.
Yeah.
The double neck?
Yeah.
Why did you put a guitar to it?
Well, I got a double neck with a bass on it, so I wanted to try one of the guitar in there. Jamie's talking about I got a custom shop Yamaha double neck with bass and guitar. And I just thought if I'm playing bass in some band sometime and the guitar player's got to do something, I can play bass with my feet on the bass pedals, kind of like Taurus pedals that I use, and then help him out on guitar there as best I can. That was the idea behind it.
Yeah, I think you can see see a picture of it right on your. Is it your Twitter page?
It's on my Twitter page and on my Facebook page. But I'll see you in Pittsburgh, right, Jamie?
Yes, you will.
You and your brother Paulie. Okay.
Yep. Are you going to use that on?
I'm going to try and bring
it.
It's pretty
for yourself.
Well, we'll see. I'm going to try and bring it out. I still have to set it up, and I only got a couple more days before I leave for London. But so if I can squeeze it in, I will. But if not. You're welcome to come on over and try it if you like. It's heavy, though.
It looks heavy.
Right on.
All right.
Thanks for calling,
Jamie. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Talk soon, Jamie.
So we have a...
Welcome to the Flow Guitarist Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Edward.
Edward?
From Brazil.
Hey,
from Brazil.
Welcome from Brazil. Do you have a question for Billy?
What?
Do you have a question for Billy?
From Billy.
All right. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Do you have a question for Billy Sheehan?
Yes. I'm from Brazil. My name is Edward from São Paulo, and thanks for the show made here in Brazil. Actually, the sound that you made is amazing.
Thank you very much. We had a great, great time in Brazil with the Winery Dogs just recently, and people there were amazing.
Thank you so much, Billy.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Obrigado.
Come to Exo Music, man. Please.
I'll come back again.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, bro. See you next time.
Thanks for calling.
See you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Obrigado.
So, Billy, we have a question from our live chat room. They're asking, what is the practice and warm-up routine that you do while you're on tour before you play?
Yeah, it's pretty elaborate. I do a lot of, sometimes I'll just sit there and go and with my right hand and I just get an even, solid
I'll turn the distortion off because it's a, more of a performance tone than a illustration tone. I'll just sit there and trying to get even, and then I'll do things like a... I'll just try to do a four notes per string. Next string, next string, next string, and then up one, and then down. And I'll go up and down the neck over and over and over ad nauseum. If you're in the room with me and I'm warming up, I'm going to drive you crazy because I just do this for about an hour. And then I do variations on that. And just about every movement my hands make during the body of the show or a song, I'll take those movements apart and drill them and examine them individually and work on them to look to see if there's any aspect of it that's weak or out of time or not landing the way it should, and just drill it. And then my hands will get up to a point where suddenly the strings actually feel like they're now even closer to the neck, and it's easier to play. And all this stuff is, so then I know I'm warmed up. And from that point, sometimes I'll work a little bit more creatively, but at that point, I'm ready to go on stage. And for me, before the show is a real critical time. A lot of people like want to hang out and party and talk and do stuff. Even I want to warm up. I want to warm up my bass and my voice because people paid their hard-earned cash to come in and see, and I want to do my very best for them. So party time's for after the show. For me, before the show, it's very important.
So the one thing I want to say, I know my wife is listening. So that little first technique he was doing was the spider walk that I've shown you, Angelina.
Oh,
so,
the, so you, that's you, what
that's,
it is?
Yeah, well, that's what I've called it, is the
cool.
spider walk. So see, even Billy does it, and it helps.
The spider walk.
But he's a lot faster than both of us. So.
Well, it doesn't matter how fast you are. Sometimes you got to do it really slow.
Right.
Note at a time, real easy, lay right into the groove. You know, I did it. I'm just trying to illustrate what I'm doing there, but I always started out pretty darn slow.
Do we have another caller?
Yes, I don't have a number for this one. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name is Latrell. I'm calling from Los Angeles to talk with Billy Sheehan about bass playing.
How you doing, bro?
Right, yes. Looky here. I'm a big fan of you for a long time, and I'm just trying to configure in my mind, what is your favorite project you've done? Because I know you've done some nasty. You play with Dennis Chambers. I know that. I know you play with Dennis, and that's my boy. So start right there. What's your favorite project? Is it the Dogs, the Wander Dogs? Is it Mr. Big? You got?
Well, they're all, I'm lucky because they're all great, and you are correct, sir. Dennis Chambers is the man. He changed my life.
He's a bad boy.
He's the greatest musician I know on any instrument, period.
And you think he's better than like somebody like, I don't know, like if you listen to Richie Kotzen play the guitar, like you like playing with Dennis better than Richie?
Well, Richie's a different thing. Richie is a singing dynamo, guitar playing.
Yeah, he's a singing mother effer. I tell you, I like the boy's voice, but I tell you, I like your playing on the Winery Dogs, especially when you get up in that, you know, that funk. You got like a funk thing going on there, which is not a lot of white boys like yourself can nail that. So you funk, and you do the tapping, and you're just a badass, Billy. I just wanted to call up in there and tell you I'm a fan.
Thank you very much, Richie. Thank you, Richie. I mean, thank you. What did you say your name was? I forgot.
Latrell. Latrell Sprewell.
Give our best to LeBron, too, Richie, while you're at it.
Yeah, right. One, I'll talk to you soon now.
Well,
peace out.
Thanks for calling, and the Winery Dog CD is awesome, by the way.
Thank you. To those of you who don't know, that was our guitar player, Richie Kotzen. He is a comedian also.
We have another guy on the line. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
This is Sandy from Buffalo.
Hi, Sandy.
Hey, Sandy.
Hey, Sandy, if you could turn your radio down a little bit, that would be great. But go ahead. What's your question? No problem.
There we go.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Billy?
I want to know if he's going to come down to Buffalo with the Winery Dogs.
We'd love to come. We don't choose where we play. We only play where they book us, and we're hoping somebody in Buffalo books us. Maybe the Hard Rock Cafe, maybe somebody down in Buffalo proper, and
not only would I like to come back just so I can see all my friends and everybody there, but I would love to bring this new band back and show everybody what we do, and I think you'd be very pleased. So we'll get there ASAP, my dear.
Yeah, if they hear that this, they'll definitely want you here. You got to stop at Randy's when you're in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, I'm going to stop at Randy's when I'm in Pittsburgh. As a matter of fact, at the Hula Bar in Pittsburgh. My buddy Randy's got a bar there. He'll be out.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Sandy.
Thanks.
All righty, thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Take care, Bill.
All right, you too.
So I've got another clip from the Winery Dogs. It's from the song Hopeless that Billy alluded to. And the one thing I want to point out, so you can hear Billy doing his magic, and then Richie, or Latrell, Latrell comes in, and it's not exactly a doubling, but what's beautiful about it is you can hear Billy kind of doubling him, but he doesn't do every note. He comes in every other beat. It's ridiculous.
Okay, let me play the number six.
I mean, pretty crazy.
How do you guys do that? I mean, seriously, do you have like a metronome just like shaking your body? I mean, seriously.
No, we just, I don't know. You know, that's why it was so hard to learn, because we did it on the record and we just kind of threw at it and then we had to figure that out. Now the hard part. So I sat down for days trying to, because I knew I started. And then from there. I think. And then. It's got to be. And you got to get exactly how many notes are on each one. That goes by so fast. We went, we finally got it. But boy, it was a bear to figure that out. Crazy.
It's amazing. Do we have another call?
I just lost them.
Oh.
Go ahead.
But yeah, that happens a lot. And a lot of times I'll do a clinic or sermon and I say, you know that lick you played on the Needleman Smile? And I don't always recall a lot of stuff because each tour is a new record and all new stuff and you got to relearn it all. And I guess I should get some more RAM or something because I can't remember all those things.
Oh, here we go.
We got another call.
Welcome to the Flow Guitars Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, it's Kurt from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hey, welcome,
hey,
Kurt. You have a question for Billy?
Hey, Billy, how are you?
Doing great, man. How are you? How's Las Vegas? Is it hot out there?
Yeah, it's pretty hot. We had rain for a few days, but I have a question for you. You know, I've kind of known you on and off for the last 30 years. I'm from Buffalo, New York, originally.
Great.
And we've spoken a couple of times over the past few years, but I'm looking forward to seeing you in Las Vegas on October 4th at the Vamped Club.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I wanted to ask you is that, you know, I've studied your playing and I've studied your finger position, and I have to ask you, I see some things that you do with your fingers and your pinky that almost looks like your fingers are double jointed. Do you have double joints in any of your fingers?
Not really. But I have this this urge to be able to get, I want to get what I'm hearing or the note I need to do. So sometimes I'll push my hands in ways that they probably shouldn't go or don't go. But for me, it's more important to get the note, get the line, and get it right and get it in time. So sometimes I will push my hands. But I think there's my little finger does bend back a little bit on the, if you can see it on the webcam. Like if I'm gonna play a chord, my little finger will bar these two notes, and that first joint will bend a little bit. So I'll get that. I'll get the little bar chord like that. But I don't know. My hands are pretty much pretty normal. They don't do anything out of the ordinary, and they don't bend in any way.
Well, I guess maybe because of the you know, the practicing and, you know, forcing the fingers and the joints to do those things, they might do things that are a little bit out of the ordinary from the ordinary bass player standpoint.
Yeah, it's inevitable that you're going to come up with things that that are out of the range of what normalcy is, I guess. But that's okay. I think all of us as musicians, we want to push things a little bit and come up with our own ideas. Your hands are different than mine. The way you know, the texture of the skin on your hands is gonna, the tonality of your skin on the strings. It's all. I mean, this show is a lot about tone, and everybody's hands are different. And the electronics and the basses and the strings and pickups are all important, but it all starts with your hands. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought you'd concur with me on that. And
yeah,
it's a very important thing.
And it's funny, during the course of this evening, at no time did his fingers leave his hands.
Not that.
But what he's not telling you, he has six fingers.
Yeah. What he was saying about the pinky, using the pinky to bar, a lot of classical guitarists use that. That's a technique that they use a lot. Now, it takes a lot more strength to do it on a bass,
because
those are heavier strings. But, yeah, those techniques of that type of bar, it's not unusual. But you have to develop it.
Cool.
Right, and you don't really play with a very low action. Actually, your action is a little bit higher than normal.
Yeah, when I start a tour, it's a little low because my hands aren't up to speed yet. But as I go, I start playing harder and I start overwhelming the string, so I got to actually raise it up a bit. So right now I'm a little bit lower than it normally is, but by the end of the tour it'll be up to where it usually sits.
Well, listen, great job with the Winery Dogs. I don't want to take a lot of time, you know, away from somebody else that wants to call in. I'm looking forward to seeing you here in Las Vegas, my friend.
All right, I hope I get a chance to speak with you, and I'll see you there for sure, man. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, bro.
Welcome to the Flow Guitar Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Jason from upstate New York.
Jason, do you have a question for Billy?
Billy, how you doing, man? I saw you at BB King.
Oh, right on, Jason. What a night. What a night it was.
That was awesome, and I'm going to check it back out late October. I'm going to bring a whole bunch of people down to somewhere in the city, either Eddie Trunk's thing or somewhere. We're going to all head down there.
Yeah, we're doing the Eddie Trunk anniversary thing that's happening. It's 30-year anniversary, and it's the night in B.B. King's was the hottest, sweatiest night I've ever seen in that room, so that was pretty cool. I'm glad you were there, bro.
Yeah, it was something for me, and my wife loved Richie, so, I mean, it was something for everybody down there.
Do you have a question?
I was a mediocre guitarist for about 17 years, and then my friend told me I should pick up the bass a few months ago, and we're doing a power trio, similar to what you did back in Buffalo. We're just starting out and just trying to make some songs. And I'm curious, I'm always wary to experiment because, you know, in a three-piece, if you make a mistake, it kind of stands out.
Sure does.
What's your go-to move if you try to experiment a little bit and you know it's going south?
Well, when you play a wrong note, play it again.
Call it jazz.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it's really true. I've experienced it myself. I play the passage and I hit the wrong note. If passage comes by again and I do it the same way with the wrong note, and people look at each other, and go, oh yeah, I get it now. I see what he was going for. So there's a lot of jazz guys say the same thing. You know, when you make a mistake, play it again. But I don't know. It's just it's inevitable. I play with some great, great, great players, and other than Dennis Chambers, everybody makes mistakes. part of the process is learning how to recover from making a left turn when you should have gone straight. You know, so that's part of it. So get out and play live, and it will come to you how to treat that and how to recover from it. And how to find your way back. Because sometimes when you're in the middle of a complicated thing and you lose it, it's tough getting back home again. So yeah, it's a process that comes to you on any instrument if you just give it enough time.
Thanks, Billy. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Winery Dogs, great album.
Thank
Good
you,
luck.
Bro. We'll see you next time back.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. So, Billy, one of the other things that you're also very known for is doing chords on the bass.
Yeah, I've been doing some like a more flamenco. I'm going to get a little less distortion here so I can hear what I'm doing. It's kind of like a... Again, more of a flamenco kind of a... It came from a couple things. It came from... lights down on Broadway back in New York City, and learning like a.
I've never heard that on bass.
That's the sensitive Billy Sheehan.
Yes. The dulcet tones.
The jazz stylings. Like a.
Well, for new bass players, how would you recommend that they approach learning chords, and where do they start?
They start with a big fat E, a B, and another E for a big good ending solid chord without any. You don't want those notes yet. Later on, when you start to put in and all the chords like that. They're hard to do loud and with a bass. In your solo, yeah, maybe you can get away when you turn it down, but basically you want to be able to hit a. I'm out of tune in a second. This big solid, and once in a while, you're doing a big giant song and it's in the key of C and you're ending it. Basic bar chords. Minor, suspended major, of different versions of it, but just to be able to hit a big, can give you your guitar player a lot of room to step off that and solo and do his thing, while you're holding the low note and also getting implying that chord. So I'll do just basic solid guitar bar chords, but hit them hard. And you can't stay at them too long. You got to go back to those single notes, because when you do that chord, everything kind of concentrates. All those notes are together as one. You need one giant. You need that big solid C note in there. So do the chord to imply what you need to do, and get back right to normal bass playing again. Seems to work.
We're at the end of the show. You wanted to ask him, though, real quick about
I wanted to ask him that, and I also want Andy to mention this cool little bass amp.
Yeah,
Monster is just awesome.
The A70 is a great little compact tilt-back bass combo, built-in equalizer. What we like, and I think what Billy likes about this too, is Harkey's really great with compression. As we all learned from Mr. Paul McCartney, bass is always better with a little compression on it, kids.
Yes, sir.
Kids, listen up. A little compression. So what Harkey does is they like to put compressors in their amplifier. So the A70, I think, retails for maybe $249. So you can find it at your local music store and everything, and it's a lot of amp for that. DI output makes a great small live amplifier as well.
What's the wattage on? That's a 12 in it,
That's
right?
A single 12 at 70 watts. So small room gigging, that kind of thing. But what we like about it is tone shaping, is Billy can actually plug into this and get the same tones that we'd get out of his bigger amp for smaller venues or for rehearsal.
Yeah, it's got a graphic on it. Very nice.
We just did a bunch of Winery Dog stuff and a couple little radio stations and things like that. And Richie would play acoustic guitar. I'd bring this amp. And it would just be a perfect little amp. Because it's got enough, it's clean tones, sweet tones to work along with an acoustic guitar. But then when I need to really get a little bit something out of it, I just crank it up a little bit, and it's just it's a great amp. I keep it in my house all the time, and it's the only amp that's in the main living area of my house. The only one my wife will allow.
Well, we're at the end of the show, so if you want to pick up the CD, is The Winery Dogs. The website is thewinerydogs.com, I believe, correct? Mm-hmm. It's The Winery Dogs on Facebook also.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
And there's BillySheehan.com.
There is.
And his Twitter's Billy on Bass.
Billy on Bass.
So thank you very much, Billy. Before we go, would you mind kind of giving us a little ditty? And then after that, we'll kick into The End of Time Machine, which features the entire band. It's a great little piece. So go ahead, Billy, and then...
Just cue me and I'll put the other...